Leah's Britain and Rampart, still adjusting straps and slamming magazines into their weapons. A giant gate, easily twice the size of anything Britain had conjured, opened in front of the vehicle.
He's a portamancer.
Just like you. Or just like you will be if you don't do as you're told. Get in the Striker, Oscar. We're moving.
They got in.
You're not going to gear up, sir?
Harlequin balled his fists as the vehicle lurched forward.
Just keep your geared up ass out of my way and you might learn something.
Britain felt the sudden change in magical flow as they pierced the gate.
Welcome to the source.
Shit!
Yes, I know what Dawah means. It's Arabic for what? Conversion? Preaching? When Islam first took hold here, we had plenty of that, I can tell you. But Dawah is an older word for us. It was our way, our medicine of the old gods. When the world awoke, the Dawah came back to us. Some of us, very few and very old, remembered what to do with it. But we taught the young, and it gave them the strength to fight the many old gods against the new one. Hihu Okonkwo, Kisi Tribe, Bantu Nation.
They cut the road, sir. Rotary wings, the only way to the forward operating base. Black Hawk is spinning up on the pad right now.
Christ!
Harlequin jerked a thumb at Britain.
Close detail on our guest here. Anything happens to him between here and the helo, you'll wish it had happened to you. Rampart, if you don't run suppression, I have to, so keep yourself out of the fight. Dampener or no dampener, I'm not taking any chances. You keep his flow blocked. Oscar, keep your head down and go where I damn well tell you. On deck!
The dawn flooded over. Even the half-light was dazzling, the rough ground glittering with bits of crushed rock. The air had the same intense, alive smell, tainted with other odors, all strengthened by the source's heightened sense of things. Gasoline, cordite, ozone, and blood. A Black Hawk helicopter stood 30 feet across from them, rotors spinning. A gunner stood in the open door behind the whirling barrels of a minigun, spitting a stream of rounds into the distance. They stumbled down the ramp. Harlequin leaped out of the hatch, rocketing airborne. Over Harlequin's shoulder, Britain could see a massive bird banking toward them. Its brown feathers reflected with gold, black beak opened wide enough to swallow a car. A mottled bird's nest of rope was strapped between its wings.
Move, dammit!
The escort pushed across the perennial saw-edged grass, withered and burned in patches, making for the helo. A long line of concrete blast barriers formed a wall and stretched past Britain's field of vision. The helo gunner stopped firing, motioning them onward. The escort stopped short as a long metal javelin thudded into the earth before them, quivering.
Whoa!
The soldiers in front of them scattered, firing their carbines skyward. The bird circled above them, the basket on its back writhing. Britain's eyes widened as he saw it was crammed with small, brown-skinned humanoids. Huge heads topped gnarled bodies and large pointed ears jutting, pinned back by the wind of the giant bird's descent. Garish paint adorned their faces, ragged stripes, handprints, streaking stars. One of them, painted completely white, clung flat to the bird's neck just behind its head. Most of the creatures in the basket brandished bright metal javelins in their long, thin hands, but at least one held a carbine. One of the creatures hefted a grenade launcher, meant to be attached to the underside of a rifle. It fired, the recoil knocking it back into the basket. Britain looked back at the bird. Red holes blossomed in its wings as bullets tore into it, but didn't seem to notice. Britain raised his carbine and sighted down it. Rampart slapped the barrel down.
Yeah! What the hell are you doing? Get your ass in the helo!
A cluster of javelins burst from the basket. One of the escorts fell and impaled through the neck. More rounds tore into the bird. It just kept coming. Britain could feel the wind swept toward them by its massive wings. Rampart threw his shoulder into Britain, setting his legs moving again as the two ran for the helo. A funnel of wind drilled horizontally through the air, focusing all the gathered dust into a gritty corkscrew. The tornado slammed into the bird's back, rolling it over and sending it tumbling across the track until it slammed against the concrete barrier wall. The small creatures had tumbled from the basket, pitching across the ground. A few stirred.
Damn it, Rampart! How hard is it to get him in a damn helo?
Suddenly, a hammer blow threw Britton on his back, his body armor digging a trough in the rough ground, his nose filled with a burning stink. His carbine was gone. His magazine pouches smoldered in his vest. The magazines inside must have absorbed the blast. They were melted, the bullets fused with their containers. One of the brown creatures rose some 50 feet over the concrete barrier wall, its body wreathed in blue electricity. Its eyes were long and yellow, cat-like. Its long nose hooked over a snarling mouth, showing tiny pointed teeth. Its skin was crusted with thick white paint.
Christ! Don't you run!
Britton felt the magic tide return as the suppression fell away. The flow came gently, controlled by the dampener in his blood. Rampart dropped his carbine to dangle from its sling and raced forward, hands outstretched. The creature flew forward, the halo of electricity pulsing for another strike. And then the electricity winked out. The creature hung in the air for a moment, eyes wide, then plummeted. Rampart hauled Britton to his feet and propelled him the last few feet to the helo. The crew chief, head invisible in his flight helmet, knelt over him, clipped a carabiner to Britton's belt, and secured the other end to a metal ring in the center of the Black Hawk's floor.
He's in! Let's go!
The suppression took hold again as Rampart settled himself beside the crew chief. Only then did Britton realize that he hadn't even thought to use his magic to escape when he had that brief chance. Even if he had thought of it, how could he have made it work? The dampener protected him from the overwhelming power of the current. He still lacked the control to call it to his will. Britton gripped the metal ring as the Black Hawk banked, watching out the open door past the gunner's hip. Harlequin arced through the air toward one of the giant birds. That far above the ground, Britton could see the land outside the concrete barrier wall ringed the LZ. It was dotted with small groups of the brown squat humanoids, each surrounding one of the white-painted ones that had nearly fried him a moment ago. One of the white-painted creatures burst into a fireball which shot upward, missing Harlequin by several feet. The fighting raged beneath them, but the creatures were falling back. Erupting balls of fire and brief flashes of lightning spoke of magic on the ground, but it came less and less frequently. At last, they swept beyond it.
What the hell are they?
Really big birds.
No, I mean the things on their backs.
Goblins.
Goblins? Is that what they really are?
Nobody knows what they are. They're indigenous around here. Until somebody comes up with something better, they're goblins.
They have guns?
Every once in a while, they get lucky and take out a supply truck or one of the indige workers at the FOB smuggles one out. I'm not worried, though. They don't know how to zero them, and their bodies are too small to handle the recoil. Half of them don't bother to use the sights. It's not stolen weapons you need to worry about with these bastards. It's the magic. They live in the source all their lives and come up latent at around twice the rate we do.
Indige?
A lot like the Mujahideen back in the old War on Terror. Bunch of broken up tribes fighting themselves. The only thing they hate more than each other is us. They lay off someone in the winter, but they go on the warpath something fierce once the weather gets warm.
Britton shook his head and rubbed his temples. Why not goblins? They didn't fit the description he'd come to know from his days of role-playing games and fantasy books. But the birds did. Massive creatures with black beaks and talons, large enough to threaten the ship at sea. Britton had read of them in Persian mythology and comic books. They were rocks. The battle below him surged around a creature he couldn't identify. A towering black figure, vaguely man-shaped, swept among the goblin ranks, darting out toward the soldiers. It moved, light and quick, oily smooth, one moment in one location, and the next several feet forward. Its huge mouth slavered, flashing giant teeth and a horned head that reared 10 feet above the multitude.
Jesus, what the hell is that?
The helo banked sharply and moved on, leaving the battle behind. Britton looked out the open doors. Past the gunner's boot, a much wider line of concrete blast barricades formed a massive wall. Behind it, makeshift wooden buildings stretched under corrugated metal roofs. The spaces between were alive with people and vehicles.
Where the hell are we?
Forward Operating Base Frontier. Hope you like it, because you're going to be spending an awful lot of time here. The FOB's the one place in any world where probes like you are permitted to exist.
What are you? Keech. Lost. You abandoned the flow that bore you. You wandered far. What can you expect? Take the blood from Heptahad and they die. That's what you are. Walking dead. We are not killing you. We are merely reminding you of that death. We are forcing you to lie down and accept what happened to you long ago. Captured Zorahad Defender, Goblin Warrior. Custodial debriefing transcript translated to English.
The Humvee Britain rode in turned onto a dirt road that snaked its way between shipping containers converted into windowless housing. Each was surrounded by piled sandbags, gabions rigged from wire fencing and packed earth, or the occasional concrete blast barrier. Water tanks stood atop showers built from blue tarps stretched across plywood frames. Longer trailers and enormous military tents indicated all the patchwork efforts of a forward-deployed center, a band-aid of a dining facility, a smudge of a gym, a morale, welfare, and recreation building. Britain had called them the DFAC and MWR. He missed the membership those old acronyms implied. The Humvee bumped past a busy combat surgical hospital. Britain felt naked without his weapons and armor, which an armorer along the flight line had forced him to check in, trading him a camouflage parka, inadequate to the harsh cold. The forward operating base was a joint operation. Air Force airmen in digital tiger stripes, Navy sailors in work dungarees, marched alongside SOC soldiers. Britain saw Marine Suppression Lance grunts and surly rows, their magic kept under wraps by the suppressing officer, anchoring the line. His eyes grew huge at the number of full-fledged SOC sorcerers simply walking around. He saw a pyromancer helping a work crew by heating a piece of metal. Terramancers raised firm paths out of the mud. Aromancers in flight suits streaked overhead. More incredible were the goblins. He saw them everywhere, wearing blue jumpsuits like prison uniforms, save for the intertech patches on the shoulder and chest. They clustered in groups, spreading gravel over the mud, tending tiny beds of grass, running the septic truck as it pumped out the latrines. As they passed the cache, Britain saw at least one of the things in blue scrubs carrying out a barrel marked as biological waste. Each group had at least two soldiers in full battle gear standing watchfully by. The other humans ignored them. Harlequin followed Britain's gaze to the goblins and smiled.
You're not the only Intertech employee we've got working out here. The Indige are decent workers when they're not stealing supplies or spotting targets for their brethren outside the wire.
The Humvee came to a stop outside a 40-foot shipping container, gray paint rusting off its ridged metal sides. P4 was stenciled on the door. The flat roof was piled high with sandbags. More were stacked haphazardly around the sides. A small wooden staircase, stained dark with moisture, leaned precipitously away from the doorway before drowning in mud. Beside it stood a giant concrete staple piled high with sandbags. A red and white sign reading Bunker hung from the top. Several more identical converted containers stretched away in a row.
Home sweet home. Chow Hall's up the road about 100 yards. Latrine and showers are the other way just as far. DFAC is 24-7 for sandwiches and cereal. Standard meal times if you want Indige serving you freshly grilled cats and dogs. Your supervisor will be meeting you outside the MWR tomorrow morning, 06:30 sharp. I recommend you get cleaned up, fed, and rested. Intertech's a demanding company. They're going to expect you to hit the ground running.
Britain stepped out and nearly lost his boot to the thick mud. He turned to look up the track and froze. Three men were crossing the lane, military uniforms faced with red edging and gold buttons, the Indian flag stitched onto the shoulder. Their heads were wrapped in white turbans. Neatly trimmed beards hugged their chins. Britain blinked at what glided along beside them. It towered over the makeshift structures, huge shoulders surmounting a chest as broad as a coffee table with biceps the size of footballs on at least a dozen pairs of arms. The torso terminated in a snake's tail, as thick as an oil drum and trailing off out of Britain's view. The vaguely humanoid collar sprouted into a bevy of snake's heads on spear-length necks. The creature was covered in gleaming, jewel-like scales, shading from purple-green at the heads to jasmine pink along the tail. An arsenal of swords, axes, and bladed discs were thrust haphazardly into a red silk sash around its waist. A few of the heads swung his way, tasting the air with vari-colored tongues as the party passed.
I forgot to mention, Bob Frontier is a combined operation. The Sahir Corps are just one of the foreign attachés we got here. You're not to have any contact with them unless specifically authorized.
The SOC captain turned to Rampart and nodded. Britton felt the magical tide flow back into him, strictly controlled by the dampener.
No more suppression. Just remember, we've got our eye on you. The FOB's roughly 30 square miles. Your ATTD pops up anywhere outside that zone, even for a minute, and
boom.
The dampener should cover you for the next couple of days at a minimum. If, God forbid, you feel like you're being overwhelmed anyway, just get down in the mud and shout, suppress, 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 with all you've got. I assure you that you will never be out of earshot of someone with significant suppression capabilities anywhere on this FOB, day or night.
Sounds more like a warning.
Take it however you like. Good luck in your new career. I have to say I'm very pleased that you elected to cooperate with us. You're a talented soldier, and I have every confidence that you'll be just as good in your new role. Just remember what I've been telling you. Stick to the regs and everything will be fine. The rules are in place to protect you. Don't mess with them. Remember, outside the MWR tomorrow. Don't be late.
The inside of his container was carpeted in mud-stained blue and occupied by a particle board desk, closet, and dresser. A metal-framed army cot occupied one wall under the light of a single long fluorescent bulb. An army duffel rested on the bed, packed with rough linens, towels, and a toilet kit. The duffel also contained a dark gray ball cap with the Intertech Company logo and two identical sets of clothing, khaki cargo pants rife with ammunition pouches and clip points for carabiners, and skin-tight black shirts. The shirts were blazoned on the right shoulder with a subdued American flag, white on black. The left shoulder was stamped with the SOC arms. Over the right pectoral, a ghosted star emerged from behind a crescent moon. Over the left pectoral was another symbol he knew was unique to him, the outline of an arched doorway.
It's hardly keeping my ability a secret.
Beside the duffel lay a massive binder as thick as a telephone book, crammed with papers. Personnel Manual, Special Regulations for Intertech Personnel Serving in Forward AORS. Britton leafed through it, then tossed it aside. It would take him a week just to read a quarter of it. He trudged through the mud toward the shower, looking for exits. They were letting him walk around unsupervised. There had to be a way to escape. He could probably just walk off base. But then what? He'd be in an unfamiliar country already proved hostile, and they could set off the ATD the moment he appeared outside their designated perimeter. He crowded in with a dozen soldiers, shivering under cold water that poured from black bags insufficiently warmed by the sun, cringing with each breeze blowing through the gaps in the tarp walls. He racked his brain for an answer and kept returning to the same thing, a hard steel transmitter packed with explosives deep inside his heart. There was no escape.
That's bullshit. There's a way. And you will stay on the throttle until you figure out what it is.
After his shower, he flopped onto the thin mattress in his room without bothering to set the sheets. He tried to figure a way to defeat the ATTD, but fatigue overwhelmed him, and in moments he was swamped in dreamless sleep. He woke in blackness, the air gone frigid. Changed into the only clean clothing available, the odd uniform he'd found in the duffel. Still groggy, he pulled on his coat. The night was alive with stars, the massive moon bright enough to read by.
Cold, huh?
Britton turned to face a young man in glasses so thick that his brown eyes looked huge, swimming in fish bowls. He was tiny, his brown hair only coming up to Britton's chest, his skin so pale that it practically glowed in the moonlight. His uniform, identical to Britton's, flapped off his scrawny frame. A stylized skull grinned from his left pectoral.
Yeah. You work for Intertech, too?
All FOB personnel, all FOB personnel, take cover. I say again, take cover. Bob Reaction Force, action stations. I say again, action stations.
Britton turned for the bunker.
I wouldn't bother. The goblin pyromancers conjure flame strikes from the sky or just outside the walls. If you get tagged, the bunker isn't going to help. Might as well enjoy the night as best you can. If it's your time, it's your time, right? Just don't go anywhere. The MPs get annoyed if they catch you walking around during an attack.
A pair of Apaches streaked over the barricade wall, searchlights flashing beneath them. An electric cart whined down the lane. The cart was piled with goblins in jumpsuits, shouldering shovels and hammers.
Happens most nights. Sometimes a few times a night. You get used to it.
He extended a hand.
Simon Trulove.
Oscar Britton. Nice to meet you.
Well, welcome to Contractor Row, or you can call it P-Block, if you're so inclined.
All the contractors live here?
All the magic-using ones, yeah. Right now, that's just four of us, including you. The rest of the Peapods are occupied by regular Sock sorcerers. Fitzy's on the end closest to the DFAC.
Fitzy? Peapods?
You're half asleep, aren't you?
I guess my sleep patterns haven't been consistent lately.
I was heading down to the officers' club for a drink. We meet up there most nights. Why don't you come along? You can meet the rest of the coven and we can explain everything to you.
Britton followed him down the road in the direction of the chow hall. The mud track ran several hundred yards, punctuated on either side by identical trailers converted to living quarters, each with the letter P stenciled on the doors, along with ascending numbers.
P-Pods.
The O-Pods are just outside our checkpoint. There are some joint service troops and big army types, but you're in the middle of Sock territory here. We don't go out to the rest of the FOB, and they don't come here.
So we're in the same coven? Notice the uniform.
Coven 4. That's us. We're the contractor unit. Covens are like squads in the Sock. We catch some crap for it. You know, blood-sucking contractors, but you get used to it. For one thing, we're not under the uniform code of military justice.
And we can drink.
All the officers drink here. Sock isn't under General Order 1 out here in the Source. Man, Oscar, I'm really glad that you're here.
Why's that?
Your timing is perfect. The two of us have been stood up for a month, just going over basics. They'll put you in Downer in the SAS, teach you the basics, and we can get started right away.
The track gave out into the wide dirt square where the chow hall stood, well lit by bright sodium arc lights. Other vast tents bordered the square, what Britton guessed was the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation Building, the Post Exchange, and the gym. Britton scanned the square once more before realizing what was missing. The Army Post Office that was standard on all military installations. Even at that late hour, a line snaked out of the chow hall's main entrance. They wore an assortment of uniforms, gym gear, civilian jeans under light coats. Goblins scuttled in and out of a side entrance, carrying pots and crates bulging with food. A few of those online noticed Britton and Trulove and tapped buddies on the shoulders. In moments, the tail section of the line was doing its best not to obviously gape at them and failing miserably. A few junior CBs, Navy Construction Battalion workers in hard hats, pointed before being abruptly silenced by their chiefs. Trulove shook his head at the line.
Sorry, Oscar. You get used to it.
It's the uniforms, isn't it?
Yeah, they kind of freak people out.
Why?
They didn't tell you? We're the probe coven. That's why it's all contractors.
I had an inkling when they didn't kill me. I've seen them kill probes, especially when they fight.
The Sock bends the rules sometimes. I guess they think that so long as we don't work for the government, that's okay. I didn't run or anything, not like you did. I don't judge you or anything. It's all fine with me. I just called the Sock hotline as soon as I manifested.
But you're a probe. Didn't you think they'd kill you?
I didn't think about it, honestly. What choice did I have? You can't run from the Sock.
Britton didn't know how to respond, so he turned to the officers' club, marked by a stencil-painted wooden board, cobbled together from plywood sheets to form what looked like a giant one-room schoolhouse. The roof was scraps of corrugated plastic sprayed irregularly with fire-retardant foam. Beside the door, some enterprising Navy CBs had built a small plywood pedestal to which they'd affixed their emblem, a worker bee wielding a Tommy gun and construction tools in its six legs. A cigar protruded from the grim mouth. Can do since 1942, the logo read. A silver statue of a huge boar topped the pedestal. Its giant ridged back glinted in the hard light, the metallic bristles sharp as needles, so fine they swayed gently with the breeze. the long tusks curled between snarling teeth to sharp, brass-tipped points. Its silver eyes seemed to be glass.
It's real. I know it looks like a sculpture, but I saw them take it down in the woods between the LZ and here. We're mostly confined to the fob, but you get out once in a while. The source is an amazing place.
The wind picked up, and True Love tugged him inside.